I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
But defensively, I just can't get past how they're going to cope with him defensively, because I really feel like he's going to be a problem for him. And I feel like James Harden and other guys on the team, that's going to have a bad effect on them, because they've never been known for their defensive prowess either. So you lose good defenders and you bring in a guy like that, it's going to be tough for them to maintain their good defensive intensity and what they were doing last year, what they built on last year, the improvement they made defensively. So they're much worse to me. And yeah, I think they have a chance to be still number two, but I really feel like after last night, seeing how Utah can play and how good they will be and how good they play, even though their best player didn't play his best game in Donovan Mitchell, I really feel like they'll probably end up at the three spot.
Let's get to our next guest, and the one and only, Gary St. Jean, NBC Sports Bay Area TV analyst. Kalena, because you don't get enough of Saint on a regular basis,
I need more.
We're going to bring the two of you together on this program as well. Saint, thanks a lot for coming on the show. You're on with JD, and you know the other guy pretty well. How are you this morning, buddy?
Good morning, fellas.
What's up, Saint?
Still in a little bit of shock after that game last night, the number two game in the season, and Clint and I were just shaking our heads. We're like, you know, the other team makes 19 threes, you know, they make 10 and a quarter, they score 47 points, and yet you don't put your head down, you keep battling, and somehow champions find a way to win. And it was a great game.
Well, and Saint, we were talking about it too. It felt a little bit more like 2 or 3 years ago, where the Warriors would get down, but they would always come back and they would show that fight to win. And when you win games like that, there's a carryover effect to it. You're feeling good the next day. You're feeling good about watching the film of maybe some of the mistakes you made. It keeps the vibe, because we're all concerned about the vibe around this Warriors team and it not getting stagnant. When you have electrifying wins, doesn't it prevent some of that stagnation of an 82-game grind from permeating into the mix there?
You ask Kalena, what's a better feeling than being in a visiting locker room and winning at the buzzer and just getting in that huddle with the hands in there and the look at each other and the smile? It's something you just never forget. It's so special. And, you know, we didn't see a perfect defensive game. I think you got to give a lot of credit, though, to Utah. But, you know, as you're making note of, John, the defense had, you know, a lot of slippage in the first half, obviously, 81 points. But, you know, turn it around and give up 42 in the second half and make so many big stops. I mean, the defense won the game, and obviously Kevin and Steph were magnificent, but Kalen and I were just smiling about Draymond. You know, he's not all the way there as far as conditioning, you know, with his tendonitis and whatever. But my gosh, at the end of the game, knocking down that three, taking the charge, you know, just making the plays that make you win. And that's the trademark of this team. We know there's a lot of room to grow here. The bench isn't defined at all. That's going to be a work in progress. Clay's had a couple games that are not Clay-like. And as we talked about Draymond not being extremely healthy. But you know what? We've got to be patient. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And as a coach and as a veteran player, you like to see the growth in young players. And so this will be, you know, a great experience. You know, maybe Kevon Looney wasn't as good. Maybe Jones wasn't as good as game one. But you know what? We got another game tomorrow. and it'll be fun.
Hey, Saints, talk about Steph, too, because you were saying in the green room, too, how you just love how smooth his game is and how in control of his game he is. But just his toughness sticks out to me because remember in the first half, he's getting beat up, no calls on some of the things we thought were fouls. He's getting pushed down and he ends up on the floor. He bloodies his nose. But the mental toughness to stick with it, keep playing his game, stay in control. And he almost played angry too and played really well that way.
Well, you know, Kalani, you played against Jerry Sloan's teams.
Yeah.
And they had an edge. I mean, there was no hesitation. They'd whack you if you cut through the lane or you were going to the rim. There were no easy layups. They'd put you on the line. It was really, really physical. And beyond having good principles, beyond having Gobert as a shot blocker, this team's got an edge defensively. This is their calling card. And they know Steph Curry's one of the top five players in the league. What are you going to do against a big-time skilled guy? Right. You're going to get physical with him. So they whacked him. They put him on the floor, whether it was with or without the ball. And we had a little fun when he got whacked in the nose. He had a gauze pad in a nostril, and it looked like it was hanging down below his lip. And, you know, we thought he was in the corner, you know, taking a mandatory eight count. And we compared him to some boxers. But that's what you love about him. He looks, that face, you know, he looks just like a nice guy. But underneath, there's a big-time competitor. You don't get to be where he is without having this thirst for success. And Kalani brings out the point that right now, you get in grooves as a player. And right now, he had a great summer. He really did. I mean, he caught my eye. I didn't watch all the exhibition games, but I just looked at his body, number one. Clem and I were at Media Day with Pop. I looked at him. I said, wow, I think he grew an inch.
Right. He gets taller every summer.
He was standing next to Kalena, and I'm saying, son of a gun. He's almost toe-to-toe with him right there, eye-to-eye. And then he starts playing, and he just it's just beautiful to watch him play basketball. He's in another level than anybody else as far as shooting the basketball. And so, you know, you had to get that kind of game from him. And what can we say about Kevin Durant? Holy moly.
Wow.
He was spectacular.
Saint, I want to get into the rotation a little bit because one of the things that surprised me, and I know the Warriors aren't in game shape yet and they're trying to work their way into it. I'm actually a little bit surprised at the minutes when I look at Durant last night, 39 on top of 37 in the first game, and Curry's got a pair of 37s, and Draymond's right around 33 a couple of nights there. It's interesting to me because I thought a big focus of this year was going to be maybe rest those guys a little bit more in games, play the young guys more. Are we finding that Steve Kerr's not really in a position to do that? And are we also maybe seeing that he's going for the win a little bit more maybe than we have been used to the last 2 years?
Well, I got a simple answer for you. If you went by, well, on the whiteboard, I'm chalking up, this guy's getting 12 minutes, this guy's getting 7, and you stick to that thing. If you did that, these two games, we're probably 0-2. Sometimes you got to coach by the seat of your pants, and that's what I feel they're doing. We're not letting the cat out of the bag. We got some young guys. We got some guys who aren't ready to play prime time minutes. Glenn will tell you to earn a coach to earn the respect of his players. Players have to earn minutes. You just don't hand them to them. And some of these guys maybe aren't playing where they're going to be in a month, 2 months, 3 months. So right now, John, you're right on. Yeah, he doesn't want to play those guys that many minutes. There's no doubt about it. But his goal is to get them between 30 and 33. I'll say it right now. Right now, the bench is not as good as last year's bench. You had the luxury, you know, of having a deeper bench, a veteran bench, a big bench. some guys who could make some shots. And so this is going to be a work in progress, as we said. But, if you love the game of basketball, you can't get enough of watching what Steph and Kevin did last night. That's just amazing to watch. And then winning plays, you know, the Draymond plays. And the good news is Klay Thompson's had two subpar games. He will get it going. And, that's going to help the whole rotation.
Saint, great stuff. We'll let you get back to your Saturday. What do you got on a Saturday?
You're going to laugh, John. This is pretty good. So I told Glenn, I don't like it. Last night you don't get home till midnight. But I can't sleep, so I'm up at 7. And so here I am in my office, and what am I doing? I'm studying every box score on my iPad. that's a ritual. I go through them every morning.
How many years have you done that in your life?
We didn't have iPads back then.
Well, but check them.
Yeah. 40 years now. This is the 40th year. And you know what's great? Now my son Greg sends me a copy of St. John's practice. So I'm watching Mully and Mitch and Greg running their practice yesterday. Yeah. Right now they're practicing at Madison Square Garden. And tomorrow they scrimmage Rhode Island. But I get to watch his practice. So now I finished watching the practice. I made notes. So, Coletta, one of the things I'm telling him, very loose on your 3-on-2. You've got to tighten up your fast break drills.
I like
things
it.
Like that.
Yeah.
So here I am sitting. I'm crazy. But the good news is, John, in about 20 minutes, I'm headed to the farmer's market.
There you go.
And that's the highlight. I got the fresh tomatoes. I'm talking to the strawberry lady. Then I go over here to the guy with the grapes. Then sometimes I get the spinach because I want to look like Popeye, look like Kalena. I love going there. That's my favorite thing of the week.
Beautiful. Enjoy it. That's
a life, John. It's a rough life.
That's a great life. I want to be Gary St. Jean when I grow up. That's what I tell everybody. Thanks a lot, Saint.
It. See you tomorrow,
hey,
Saint.
Guys, happy Saturday.
All right.
Gary St. Jean. I mean, there's only one Gary St. Jean.
There's no one better. He's the best, man.
He is the absolute best. All right, JD and Coletta, we'll come back. We'll get into something that Saint said that I thought was interesting here on 95.7 The Game.
Durant going to throw it in. Curry up top with Durant. Klay Thompson the far left corner. Draymond near side by the paint. Jarebko played for the Jazz last year. Holds and waits. Looking. Throws to Durant. Durant down to 4 seconds with three. Pull up in the paint. Jumper. No good. Tip by Jarebko. Got it. He got it at the horn. Jarebko came back. He tipped it in. He tipped it in.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
Well, that highlight doesn't get old for Warriors fans.
Still gives you chills, doesn't it?
Tim Roy on the call last night in Salt Lake City. Jonas Jerebko, or as Kalena says,
Jonas Jerebko
with the... He got in front of Gobert, man.
He did.
I mean, Gobert, for as great as he is, that's a rebound where if I'm Gobert, I'm not sleeping last night.
You saw Gobert kind of take a step towards KD because he's KD.
For sure.
Everybody is focused on KD. And when KD went up to shoot it, Gobert took a step towards him, and that allowed Jerebko to get perfect position, and he was right there, and the miss was perfect for Jerebko, but it was still a tough tip. Like, that wasn't just a gimme tip.
That
like,
was a great play.
Like, he's just facing the basket, and it was just a gimme. He was kind of had his back to the basket, kind of tipped it over his head, soft.
Great
touch. That was great touch. Yeah, that wasn't an easy play.
No, it definitely wasn't. So the Warriors are 2-0, 124-123, the final. They're back in action tomorrow. Right here on 95.7 The Game, as Warriors Live will be coming up for you tomorrow at about 3:30 with tip-off at 5 o'clock here on 95.7 The Game. The Warriors and the Denver Nuggets. Nuggets playing tonight at home against the Phoenix Suns. Kalena, let's go back to the rotation a little bit. And we were talking about this a little bit during the break. Patrick McCaw would be playing right now. If Patrick McCaw had signed whichever deal, the 2-year deal with the non-guaranteed or taking the qualifying offer, whatever, they both would basically put him in the same spot for next season. But the Warriors right now don't want to play Jacob Evans. They really don't want to play Alphonso McKinney, although they did last night. Damian Lee's a two-way player. Patrick McCaw would be seeing a lot of run.
I'm sick about Patrick McCaw, man. I'm just not sure what he's thinking. After 2 years and the last year being a subpar year, you want to hold out for what? Is he holding out, I wonder, or is there something else going on? Does he just not like basketball anymore? Because this is his year. He has no leverage. He doesn't have the body of work to hold out and try to get more. No one's going to offer him more. Like, the Warriors gave him what I thought they should offer him, and he decided not to take it. I don't know what he's doing, but he would be playing right now. You said it. Jacob Evans, I don't think he's ready yet or comfortable. Alphonso McKinney had some good moments last night, had some bad moments too, but he would be way ahead of them in the rotation. Last year, he's kind of fighting with Nick Young. Things got weird there. He gets injured, had some issues after that with his confidence and all those things. But this year, it was the year for him to kind of take the next step. He was going to get some minutes here. He was going to be an impact player and a guy that the Warriors relied on coming off the bench. And it's really unfortunate that this is happening. I just hope he's okay, because I just feel like there's got to be something else to this. This can't just be he's holding out for what? There's got to be something else going on. So I just pray for him. I hope he's doing okay. But if it is just holding out, I just pray that maybe someone close to him gets into his head and he's like, hey, let's just end this. Let's just get back with the Warriors, figure out the contract, just take whatever they're willing to give you and have a great year and then go from there.
Yeah, because at this point, unless he gets a better offer, even if he does, he's still got to come back to the Warriors.
Right.
And at some point, because they would likely match it.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be astronomical. I mean, there's only a handful of teams that even have money to offer him something significantly more.
Yeah.
So the Warriors probably match it for this coming season regardless, because it's on such a small scale comparatively. But at some point, he's coming back here, and I think, like, this is just me, and I'm not him, but I'd be worried about even showing back up at some point if I didn't do it quickly.
Yeah.
Like, just, you know, how are people gonna look at me in that locker room?
Yeah.
Given the things that you say.
Well, he's lucky he has the teammates he has, because on another team, maybe this wouldn't go over so well. But with this team, they're still supporting him. And I've heard guys kind of say the same thing. They wonder if something else is going on. But they all say we're his brothers. We'll welcome him back when he comes back. If he comes back, we're worried about him. We hope everything's okay. But I just feel like there's something else going on there. And I hope he comes to his senses. If he is just holding out, if it's just as simple as that, if he just wants more money, if it's just as simple as that, I hope someone close to him is able to talk some sense into him and just tell him, hey, we only have 2 years under our belt. Last year was kind of weird. We got injured, didn't have the best year. Let's come back in. We have a chance this year. There's a spot in the rotation for you, and they're a little thin at your position. You're going to get minutes. Jacob Evans isn't ready yet. You're the guy that they were going to be depending on. You can kind of take the next step if you can be a little more assertive defensively. We know he can do that. He's already automatically unselfish. That's just his nature. He knows their system. He knows the way the Warriors want to play. This would be the perfect year for him. And hopefully this doesn't go on much longer, but if there's something else going on, you just pray for him and hope he's doing okay.
And he's a player that can be used in so many different positions. It's funny, when you look at the roster composition of the Warriors, you have the four All-Stars, you have Cousins who's coming back at some point, you have Damian Jones who's getting the run as the first center. They clearly like Kevon Looney as the next big. Mm-hmm. And then you have Livingston and Iguodala. But with the way that the Warriors use Livingston and Iguodala, want to keep them fresh, want to keep them healthy, McCaw almost can be the backup
to the backup for both of them.
Right.
And it, because he's interchangeable, can play both positions. So it's a unique spot where you almost need a young player that's in a little three-man rotation with the with those two.
Right.
As far as playing time goes.
Yeah.
And he that's built in just to the way the Warriors operate naturally. Right now, they don't have that, and they're trying to figure out other creative ways to get it because they don't really trust the wing players that they have to play.
Right. You need a guy who you can throw out there and just not be worried about how much you're playing him. Am I pushing him too hard? Back-to-backs. Can he go? Is he going to be fresh? Patrick McCaw is still young, and he's also a guy that I feel like has built up a little bit of trust as far as Steve Kerr goes and can build up some more if he's taking the next step. He's a guy that Steve Kerr already likes and the coaching staff already like. So there's opportunity there for him. And I totally agree with your point. He can kind of back up both Livingston and Andre Iguodala and kind of fit in that role there. He can play some a little bit of point. He can handle the ball, so he's another ball handler on the floor, another decision maker, another guy that can probably play out of the pick and roll. He's got some improving to do in that area. Maybe his finishing around the basket, he can improve in that area, but you would have thought he was working on that during the summer. So you'd feel like, okay, he's going to take the next step. He's going to get better. And Steve Kerr was probably thinking, okay, he's a guy I can rely on off the bench. He's going to be one of our staples off the bench. And that's clearly something that they need. And we've seen that. We've seen Alphonso McKinney come in the game. He had some good moments again, but defensively probably not as good as Patrick McCaw. And Jacob Evans, offensively, probably not as good as Patrick McCaw can be. Like, Patrick McCaw has the higher ceiling there. So there's just so much opportunity. You don't want to let that go by the wayside if you're Patrick McCaw.
Yeah, it's just been a glaring hole the first two games of the season. And because it's the first two games of the season, the Warriors are able to come out and play the heavy hitters more minutes. They're able to kind of trick the rotation a little bit with, you know, Livingston's going to play more. Jarebko's going to play some four. That drops, you know, guys that may be bigs down to being able to play more wing minutes.
Yeah.
You know, you saw even a guy like Quinn Cook last night. You know, the Warriors have the, you know, Kirk kind of maps it out where guys that get first half minutes don't always get second half minutes.
Exactly.
And Quinn Cook didn't get second half minutes last night because of how he played in the first half. And that's another one. I mean, McCaw isn't really a point guard, but he's a guy that can handle the ball a little bit too. Like, there's just so many different ways where a guy like McCaw can benefit and help a team. Let's get to our next guest here on 95.7 The Game. It's Warriors This Week. John Dickinson, Kalena Azubuike. Let's get to Ben Dowsett as he covers the Jazz, NBA contributor as well for The Athletic. Ben, thanks a lot for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. Let's start here. The Jazz hit 19 threes, 81 points in the first half, 47 and a quarter. They outshot the Warriors at the free throw line. They wind up losing the game. What's the main takeaway from the Jazz after the Warriors just ripped that building's heart out at the end of that one?
Yeah, you know what? That's a really good question, and I think the answer is kind of twofold. You know, of course, nobody wants to lose a game like that, and of course, there was definitely some disappointment in the locker room afterwards, particularly from a guy like Donovan Mitchell, who didn't think he had a very good close to the game, and didn't think he had his usual kind of performance in the fourth quarter, like Jazz fans had become accustomed to last year. At the same time, I spoke to several Jazz staffers last night on the basketball side of things after the game was over, and to a man, outside of that last 5 seconds, which went really badly for them, they were pretty thrilled about how that game went. I'm not talking about moral victories because I don't think the Jazz are in a place where they're really thinking about moral victories per se, but I do absolutely think that the Jazz view this as a barometer of sorts of where they are at this point, and I think that they view it potentially as them maybe being a little further ahead than where they thought they might be at this point of the year, particularly offensively. You know, I think the offensive performance they had last night, while some of it was fueled by a little bit of hot shooting, they did only end up shooting, you know, 41% from three for the night, which is not insane. They got up a ton of great shots. They got a lot of shots at the rim. They're really happy with what they did in general. And you know, of course, like I say, they're disappointed over the loss. But frankly, I think they feel like they showed well in a game against one of the best teams we've ever seen, and kind of gave themselves a barometer for where they are.
When you look at the West, do you see Utah as the top contender for the Warriors? Do you feel like they think, okay, we're going to see this team in the Western Conference Finals, we're going to be the two seed? Is that their mentality, or do you just feel like, okay, we're just going to try to build on last year and see where we end up?
That's a good question also. I don't think that, you know, if you were to ask that question to players in the Jazz locker room, for instance, or if you were to ask that to Quinn Snyder, of course, I think the answer would be, you know, we're not thinking that far ahead. We've got 80 more games to go in this season. We're focusing on internal improvement and being as good as we can. As from an outside perspective, though, maybe from an organizational standpoint, I do think the Jazz have those aspirations. I think they're realistic at the same time about what this Warriors team is compared to the rest of the NBA. I think, you know, despite the fact that we had a very close game last night and a fantastic game, I don't think there's anyone who's being unrealistic, both within the Jazz or outside the Jazz, about how good this Warriors team is, and quite frankly, how low the probability is that they're going to lose this year. It's probably not going to happen. At the same time, that doesn't mean that you don't play for anything. And I do think that the Jazz have kind of prioritized taking a little bit of a zag where the Warriors have zigged, if you will. They're kind of, they still, you know, they play Gobert and Favors together still a little bit, although they didn't do that as much last night. They go a little bit bigger, try and slow the game down and pound things a little bit. They've kind of tried to mold that with a little bit more of a modern identity to match the Warriors in certain of their high-powered offensive areas, which I think we saw last night. I think they're still a little bit TBD with the Rockets. Maybe see how they've adjusted. They obviously didn't look very good in their season opener against New Orleans. But after seeing what happens there, I do think that the Jazz are definitely in that conversation if there's a real contender to beat the Warriors, which I don't know if that's true or not.
Ben Dowsett joining us here on 95.7 The Game, Jazz and NBA contributor for The Athletic. Warriors and Jazz, obviously, last night a thriller in Salt Lake City, won by Golden State 124-123. Frame for us the evolution of the Utah offense. So, because you mentioned they'll play Favors and Gobert together, but last night, and even watching the game against Sacramento, who looks like they're historically bad defensively, the Jazz want to get up and down maybe a little bit more. Is that something that was there last year? Is that something that's been a focus in terms of kind of changing this year? Where are the Jazz as far as the evolution of still playing great defense, but wanting to be a more high-powered offensive unit?
Absolutely. You hit it right on the head there. That has been a major point of emphasis for the Jazz, both internally and externally. Quinn Snyder has said it to the media several times that the Jazz are, last year they did make an emphasis to push more off of certain types of opportunities, right? They wanted to push off of steals, and they wanted to push off of the right kinds of defensive rebounds, those types of things. This year, they've made a real concerted effort to even be pushing off of opposing made baskets, off of opposing made free throws. The goal here isn't always necessarily to create a transition opportunity, right? That's not necessarily possible. But I think we saw last night several opportunities where when you get the ball across the floor a little bit quicker, the defense doesn't have quite as much time to think about what's going on and set themselves. You get into your action right away with 21, 20 seconds left on the shot clock. The Warriors are the prime example. They're one of the first teams that kind of took Mike D'Antoni's lead from those old Phoenix teams and started really pushing this pace and realizing even just putting the defense a couple of steps off of where they might normally be is really valuable for a possession, and especially for a team like the Jazz, who, outside of Donovan Mitchell, who's kind of pushing into this territory, they don't really have a singular offensive star like a Steph Curry or a Kevin Durant who can just kind of create things for you when you need it. You need an advantage at times. Advantage basketball has been a term that the Jazz use a lot. When you're starting your plays a little earlier and keeping the defense kind of off kilter a little bit, that helps you gain that first advantage that has the defense scrambling for the rest of the time and that creates those open threes, those open dunks for the guys like Gobert and Favors at the rim. So, yeah, that's absolutely been a big point of emphasis for them this year, is kind of trying to find that low-hanging fruit, if you will, that they haven't been taking advantage of in previous seasons.
Will you talk to me about Joe Ingles? Because I call him the Church League All-Star, because to me he looks like he should be in a church league somewhere, just his body type
and kind of the way he moves, or it looks like you can't move that well, but he's so solid. This is a guy that was on the Warriors Summer League team and just happy to have a spot there, but he clearly has a ton of self-belief, and now he is a really good player, and he had a monster game against the Warriors. Just talk to me about his evolution, his development, and how much better he's gotten over the years.
He really is one of the most remarkable stories that you'll see, honestly, in the entire league for that sort of thing, because the strain, the uniqueness of the age at which he's done this. You're absolutely right. The level to which he's improved in 4 years since he came to the NBA is staggering. He was with the Warriors Summer League team. He was then cut by the Clippers in that offseason, and he was, you know, he thought he was going to have to go back to Australia. He was there's a famous story now. His wife was on the plane to the United States when he was told that he was cut by the Clippers. The development that he's made since, and not from a young age. He was 27 at the time. The fact that he's developed this much is totally unique. You just don't see this from guys in the NBA. The typical development ages, we all know them. They're 19 to 23. That's when guys are coming into their bodies, realizing the physical skills that they have, becoming stronger mentally, that whole type of thing. You're just not used to seeing this. Even when Joe Ingles was on the Jazz in his first season, he was terrified to shoot open shots. He absolutely wouldn't take them. He wanted to defer to his teammates at all costs. Didn't want to be seen as a ball hog, was very tentative. Now he's launching 8-9 three-pointers a game, some of them contested. He's taking guys in ISO and launching step-back threes over them. He's become a fantastic playmaker for the Jazz, to the point where last night in the second half, when Golden State really turned up that defensive intensity, started switching everything and really daring the Jazz to beat them in isolation, the Jazz had nothing for them when Joe Ingles was off the floor. They had to get Joe Ingles a shorter rest and bring him back on in the fourth quarter just to avoid being rolled over by the Warriors, because he was the only one who could kind of center their offense there. The fact that he's come that far and that progression, A, it's a testament to him, of course, and the work that he's done, but B, it's also a fantastic testament to the Jazz and their development staff, who have just taken a player that you're not generally supposed to be able to develop this way at this age, and they've done remarkable things with him.
Ben, final question for you. What is a successful season for the Jazz? They obviously went out in the second round after beating Oklahoma City last year. They lost to the Rockets. Rockets went on to play the Warriors. Do they have to make a conference final, or if they wind up going out in the second round again, depending on how it looks, would that be enough in terms of being making progress?
I think your caveat there, depending on how it looks, is probably the crux of the answer, right? Because the Jazz, and especially under Dennis Lindsay, who's very process-oriented, very realistic, I don't think there's any type of, we have to make the third round, we have to make the conference finals for this to be success, and or for this to be a success, and anything but that is an unmitigated disaster. They're not that kind of black and white in this front office here. That said, I absolutely do think that they have the type of team, especially maybe seeing what they do at the deadline. They could quietly be players there, despite the fact that they are comfortable with the roster they have now. Combined with the fact that Houston may have taken a small step back, they did just play the Warriors extremely well last night, and I don't think that's going to go unnoticed. I think they absolutely do see themselves as a team that has a chance to make some noise here in the Western Conference. You know, any losing in the first round, I think, absolutely would be a disappointment. And depending on how it happened in the second round, that might not be something that they were looking for. But of course, if they were to end up with, the fourth seed and run into the Warriors in the second round, you can't do a whole lot of complaining about losing to a team like that. So I think a lot of it is going to speak to the specifics of it, the details of how it happens, the development they see from guys like Donovan Mitchell, Dante Exum, Grayson Allen, if he does end up getting into the lineup, to kind of really define themselves heading into next offseason, which they've targeted for several years as a big one, several big-name free agents hitting the market, and they have a chance to maybe grab one and really solidify themselves as a title contender moving forward.
Ben, thanks a lot. We appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again down the line.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, guys.
All right, Ben Dowsett joining us here, covers the Jazz and the NBA for The Athletic. Good stuff there on a Utah team that was certainly impressive last night as the Warriors rallied from 16 down after allowing 81 points in the first half to get a win 124-123. John Dickinson, Kalena Azubuike, We are here with Warriors this week on 95.7 The Game. Tim Bontemps will join us coming up at around 12:30. More of your calls, more of your texts as well as we roll on here on a Saturday.
Come on. 5 seconds to go. McGee wants it. He dribbles it up to midcourt. James from midcourt. Good if it goes. Knocks down a three. Two strides inside of half court. And we'll hit halftime with the Lakers leading by four, 61-57.
Yeah, Tim Roy there on the call from the preseason affair in Las Vegas about a week and a half ago with the Warriors and the Lakers. That's right, LeBron James is a Laker, and all eyes are going to be on Staples Center tonight, Kalena, including the four-letter network with a rare Saturday night special, nationally televised game. Can you imagine the network meetings between who's going to get the opener,
right?
Who's going to get the home opener? We were talking about it before the show.
Yeah.
Like, isn't it odd that his first game was on the road in Portland?
It is crazy, but you made a good point, though. They can stretch that out. You get the opener,
the
you get the
game,
home opener.
The home opener, then you make it two things.
Yeah. Exactly.
At that point.
That's
and
smart.
Both networks can share in it. So, yeah, I mean, things not getting easier for the Rockets, who got blown out at home against the Pelicans, didn't look good, and now their second game is tonight in LeBron James' first home game at Staples Center with the Lakers. And then, oh, by the way, they go back to back. So they play the Rockets have the, you play the Lakers and then you play the Clippers tomorrow night.
Yeah. Well, that first game against the Blazers that the Lakers play just kind of confirmed my general thoughts about their team.
Just
and I think
everything.
Everybody else's general thoughts about their team. They can't shoot. They want to play fast. They want to have great defense and have that be their staple and be showtime and run and get to the basket, but they can't shoot. And that's going to be a problem in today's NBA. Like, what are they going to do against the Warriors and against teams that shoot the three ball well? When teams are counting by threes and they're only counting by twos, it's just not a sustainable way to play. And I think they went 7 for 30 or something like that. So not only are they missing, they're shooting a lot of them. And if you're going to shoot that many threes, there's going to be long rebounds, and then you're going to be compromised on the other end. Transition defense is going to suffer, and you want to play fast. Other teams are going to be getting out and having numbers in transition and getting open buckets and transition layups, and it's just going to be all bad. So they almost got to figure out, okay, if we're going to be this bad shooting the three ball, maybe we shouldn't shoot that many because other aspects of our game is going to suffer. We want to be a good defensive team. It's going to be tough to be a good defensive team, especially in transition, as much as we run. If we're missing threes and there's long rebounds and other teams are getting an advantage against us and we're not able to set our defense and we're compromised on the other end. It's really one of those things where, okay, we're bad at this area and it snowballs into other areas and other parts of their game that they want to be really good at are affected by it. And LeBron James is great. It started off great. He had two crazy tomahawk dunks to start his Laker career. And then I thought in the second half, he wasn't as assertive. He wasn't as aggressive. He had 26 points, but in the second half, I felt like he needed to be a little more aggressive there. And another thing with them is that the Rajon Rondo Lonzo Ball dynamic.
Platoon.
I feel like you got to trade Lonzo Ball. I think it's just a failed thing where they just got to admit it. I know Magic Johnson, that was kind of his pick there, and he brought him in to kind of be his protege and be like him and be that point guard that kind of rallies the troops and passes ahead and makes everybody want to play together. But I just feel like Rondo does all of that stuff better. And neither of them can shoot the ball well. Rondo actually hit one. I think Lonzo hit one in that game as well. But Rondo was 1 for 2. But
Rondo's
just a better floor general, better passer. He understands the game more. And I just don't think it's going to work with both of those two. I think you got to make a decision there.
Yeah, it's interesting because they're trying to keep their options open. They're trying to keep the young talent that they have, mainly Kuzma and Ingram, they're trying to bring in veterans that can help them win now. Rondo, you're right. Rondo, you would think, would be or could be the perfect mentor for a guy like Lonzo Ball. But I'm not really sure Rondo's interested in being a mentor. I think he wants to play.
Right.
And you also see that they don't have the shooting. They're not great on defense, but they're trying to play fast to get out in transition, to get layups because they can't shoot. But like you said, they still find their way shooting threes. And then the other dynamic that's also in play with LeBron always is how much does he let his teammates do versus knowing when to take over the game.
Right.
And you, there's a great point by you. Second half, he was unsure, I think, when to do it because of how well they played in the first half.
Yeah.
And then he never really did it, and the game got away, and they wind up losing. So, yeah, they can't shoot. They're not good on D. LeBron didn't really know when to pick his spots. They're keeping their options open as far as being able to sign a free agent next year.
Yeah, all these one-year deals.
That's part of why their roster's a little bit imbalanced this season. You know, and I like JaVale McGee. We love JaVale McGee, but they're playing JaVale McGee a little too much, too, and I think that's going to be a problem.
Exactly, yeah. The asthma thing may come back to bite them, but you're right. It's a weird mix of players because there's a lot of ball dominant guys. Obviously, LeBron James is going to have the ball.
It's a weird mix, and we haven't mentioned Lance Stephenson or Michael Beasley.
I was about to say that because Lance Stephenson needs the ball to be effective. I don't think he's really that great off the ball. Brandon Ingram kind of needs the ball. I don't know if he's great at cutting, and I haven't really seen that part of his game develop that well. And then Lonzo Ball and Rajon Rondo, those guys are ball dominant. How are those guys, especially Lonzo Ball, if you want to keep him and make him an integral part of the team, how is he going to play off the ball? He's not a good shooter, even though he said he's worked on his jumper and he's got a different form now and he's not bringing it all the way over to the left side of his face as much as he was. It still looks similar and it still doesn't look like he's super comfortable with that. And I know firsthand, changing your form is probably the hardest thing to do, especially when you've been shooting one way all your life. Changing that, it almost feels like it takes another lifetime to do. Like it takes years to change that and get comfortable with it. It's repetition. It's thousands of shots. I had to change my shot, I believe it was my junior year, because one guy got to me. He's like, hey, Larry Bird never gets his shot blocked. He can shoot it over anybody. You should shoot like that guy. Shoot it from over your head. And so I started trying to do that, and all of a sudden, my shot, the ball started moving like from behind my head, and I was bringing the ball up, and I was shooting from behind my head, and when I realized I was doing that, it was almost too late. It was like habit. So to change that, it was taking me thousands of shots a day to change that, and it was so hard to do. So I know exactly what he's going through. That's not easy to do. So how are those guys going to play off the ball? And also, it makes them easier to guard. Their inability to shoot the ball, you can gap all those guys. So they're trying to get to the basket, but the lanes are clogged up. If I'm a team that's going up against the Lakers, I'm saying, okay, our strategy is just to clog the paint up. Make them beat us over the top. Make them shoot threes. Let's make sure we clog up those driving lanes, clog up the cutting lanes. Make sure you don't let anybody cut in front of your face. LeBron James is great at getting angles and making sure he gets the basket at some point in the game. But as a team, that's our main strategy. And usually that works. If you play the percentages, usually that works. So it makes them much easier to guard. Obviously, they have the best player in the world. That's exciting. They're relevant again. They're going to have the fans and the celebrities trying to get into Staples Center and clamoring to see him. But that's about it. I've said this before, if they're fourth in the West at the end of the season, I think that's an accomplishment for them. And then, obviously, that's a second-round loss.
If I said to you, Kalena, give me a win number for the Lakers, give me a total, what's the first number that pops into your head?
I'm saying 50 is a good year.
Okay. I think that's possible.
Yeah.
I've found myself actually thinking that they're going to be better than people think. And when I say that, okay, I mean top half.
What's your
of
win
the West.
Total?
I think they're going to win over 50.
You think so?
Yeah. I think it's going to be low 50s.
Low
53.
50s? Okay.
Maybe 53 tops. I think they're going to have a lot of games. I think the one thing you have to keep in mind with the Portland game in particular, they're going to play, like,
Portland's a good team, so you're going to lose. They're going to lose to other good teams, especially on the road, as they try and figure it out. I still think while they are imbalanced and incomplete and kind of an odd group of players, I still think they're going to be pretty good. And I think once LeBron figures it out, they're going to be all right. But I guess the other way I wanted to ask you was from a Warriors point of view. If you're viewing the Lakers from the Warriors perspective, and you watch them play the game against Portland, are you more fearful or less fearful? Or is it exactly what you thought?
Is it exactly how you thought it was going to look? I don't think the Warriors fear anybody. I think they give them their respect. I think they understand LeBron James team is dangerous, because LeBron James can do miracles with a less than average supporting cast. So they're definitely going to give them their respect. They're not going to take them lightly. They're going to be excited to play the Lakers, and it's not going to be hard to get up for that game because LeBron James is there. So they're going to give them their respect, and I think that's all they really owe him. I don't think they're looking at this team going, man, we better be careful here. We better bring our best effort and bring our A game, or we may lose this team. I just think it's okay. It'll be fun to play them. LeBron James is there. What are their weaknesses? They're just going to look at their team and go, okay, let's clog the paint up. Let's defend. If we stick to our defensive principles and we know our personnel and we gap guys and we take away driving lanes and we make sure the cutters aren't cutting in front of our face and we're not turning our heads, getting lost, watching the ball and lose our man behind us, we get out in transition, if we execute, because yeah, they want to be a good defensive team, but they're not there yet. The Lakers aren't there yet. So there's still things the Warriors can do. They can get their shot off anytime they want to. They can set their screens. They can still expose some guys here and there. Caldwell Pope is a really good defender. Lance Stephenson can be a pretty good defender. Obviously, Rajon Rondo. But they're still, the Warriors are still head and shoulders over them, and I think they understand that.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. You're listening to 95.7 The Game. KGMZ FM and HD1, it's KGMZ San Francisco, the radio home of the Golden State Warriors. Do we have a breaking news sounder anywhere in the system, guys? Just, I mean, we can make one up. Just because we got more breaking news, Kalena.
Okay.
We got another guy sitting out.
Oh, no.
We got another guy sitting out tonight. This would be the third time now this has happened on the show with a star player. We have Gordon Hayward, who's going to sit out against the Knicks. Mm-hmm. We have Kawhi Leonard for Toronto, going to sit out against Washington, second night of a back-to-back. We don't need, do we have the stinger or not? If we don't, it's okay.
Do you want me to do it? Just make one.
We actually have one. No, that's a good one. That might be better. Here we do. Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's got a little bed there.
That's a little breaking.
A little production bed. Jimmy Butler sitting out. Not traded, but he's going to rest tonight. Back-to-back for the Timberwolves as they are taking on the Dallas Mavericks, I believe. And the Wolves are calling it precautionary rest. So you have to put a reason.
That's the most surprising one to me.
You have to put a reason.
Yeah, I can understand Kawhi Leonard, Gordon Hayward, but this guy isn't coming off of injury.
Jimmy Butler can't take too much of having him in the kitchen every game.
Yeah, he's just coming off of going at people's heads, going at people's lives in practice and making things miserable, but then coming out and being productive and getting booed and then MVP chance. There's just a lot going on today. Energy's got to be off in that locker room. Guys are giving him fives, but they're not really making eye contact when they give him fives. Well, like, yeah, good job.
Well, honestly, Kalena, if I'm Carl Anthony Towns or I'm Andrew Wiggins, I'm going home at night.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.